Good morning. So good to see you guys all here. Thanks for being here. I wanted to start by saying thank you to Bridget, who preached last Sunday and just did such a great job. Wasn't that good? And I love that about Bridget is that, you know, a message that was so from just the crucible of her heart. And I've been thinking about a couple things that she said. One of those, though, about glory and how glory is not just for someday. Right, that glory is for today, that the kingdom of heaven is something that will be ultimately realized but draws close to us even here and now. And Jesus taught that. The kingdom is at hand. Glory is at hand. And that word glory, I think, is so helpful as we've been studying through the Sermon on the Mount, that Jesus is talking about life and the purpose of life and what this is all about and really how glory is the word that God would use to describe our purpose, our ultimate goal, what flourishing looks like. I remember years ago, Francis Chan used to do this illustration where he would pull up a balance beam onto the stage. Does anybody see him do this? And he would get up there and stand on it like this is how we start life, is in this sort of posture of like standing on this beam, but that with life, it all of a sudden gets hard or difficult, or we feel a little shaky, and pretty soon we're like down on our knees on this balance beam. And then as time goes on, we get even more afraid, and we're clutching to that beam, and we kind of go into this isolated mode, hiding and clinging until we think, what I want to do is just someday comfortably die in my sleep. And he just sort of like rolls off the balance beam onto the floor and then holds his hands up like, yes. Yes, right? Like in front of the judge. And this idea that this life has been lived in this opportunity, in this moment for glory, and how so often our whole posture is one of anxiety and fear and clutching to something that we're afraid to lose. Or a way of living that's turned inward, that's about our happiness, our pleasure, our fame. And Scripture paints a much different picture of human flourishing. I love how in Psalm 1:3, it describes us like this tree planted by a stream. And it says, it yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. And all that he does, he prospers. And this idea of life being meant to be lived in this place where it's being nurtured, it's being fed, it's growing deep roots, fruit, good fruit is being born. This picture of flourishing is what Jesus is inviting us into in the Sermon on the Mount as he talks about this way of blessing. And what we've seen from the start of this is the way that Scripture interprets blessing is very different than the way our world sees and pursues and goes after the blessed life. Ours is one of self-glorification, self-gratification. And Jesus is saying, no, the way into blessing is this posture of generosity, humility, and even dying of self. And so he goes through all these ways it's to be lived. We're to do our good deeds, but do them in secret, where our right hand doesn't even know what our left hand is doing. It's a life of love that extends to this place of forgiving even those who don't ask for forgiveness, loving even those who persecute us, in fact, even our enemies, not just worrying about what everybody sees on the outside, but going to the motives of the heart. This is the way that we thrive. And Jesus has taught this whole thing, and he kind of concludes with some warnings of where it can go wrong. But as he's doing this, as he's presenting it, he finishes with one final warning where he says, it's not enough to hear this. It's not enough to even give your consent. You have to do it. You have to go do it. And in Matthew 7:24-27, Jesus says, everyone who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. The word of the Lord. And Jesus is once again describing a choice that we have. He's been doing this. Remember, he said, there's two gates, one narrow, one wide. There's two paths, one crowded and easy, one lonely and difficult. But this narrow way leads to life. The wide way leads to destruction. And Jesus, in this case, is going to say there's two builders, two houses. And for all intent and purposes, these two houses are identical. They could be on the same street, part of like the same neighborhood or complex. Two houses standing there, the same materials. And in this, two builders, one we learn is wise and the other is a fool. And what's going to determine that is this storm that's going to hit. It's going to come through this neighborhood, and the difference is going to be seen in the result that one will stand and the other will fall. The difference being the foundation upon which they're built. I remember the first year I worked up in Forest Home, and it was right before camp started. So Forest Home is this Christian camp that I was in college at the time, and a massive earthquake hit right before camp started, kind of out that direction. Now, in California, we're all used to earthquakes. We had one just the other day, right? And you kind of like, you know, you like pause, like, when's that going to end, right? But rarely alarm. Every once in a while, things shake on the shelves. This was very different. I was in bed, and when this earthquake hit, the whole house was being jarred. And I could hear with each shake, like, cracking, right? Which is a very disturbing sound when you're indoors. And then I was in this tiny little room, and the whole room itself, like, collapsed. I felt like I was like in like one of those Universal Studios rides where the whole thing just drops, right? And it seems like a simulation where you have to actually like walk up the floor to get out. I remember being terrified. And the problem was that not that this house didn't have a good foundation, but it turns out this little room was like an add-on. And what they had done is taken all these stones from the creek and poured concrete over them, no rebar. And it created a nice little room, this little extension for themselves. The problem is when the earthquake hit, there was no strength to it. The whole thing, the whole foundation ended up collapsing in this room that I was in, like was at like a 45 degree angle. Anyway, nobody died in that little incident, thank God. But I was traumatized. But you think about the quality of a foundation, right? Sometimes it's the last thing you pay attention to until there's a crisis. This idea of building a house on sand probably meant that as they came to do the work, one of these people just started building. Both houses probably were on sand to begin with, or at least both pieces of property. But one started digging down to find the solid rock on which to build. And thinking about that, I think you see a sort of impulsiveness in the fool who just jumps right in impatience and wants to construct this thing and to build, rather than paying attention to what it lies on and upon. I remember when I had just started at the church, we had a mudslide on Bluebird. Do you guys, anybody here for that? And it wasn't the first one that we've had. I love this story because I have to tell about Dale because he's like kind of a modern day Paul Revere that... If I'm remembering the story, and you can ask Dale about it later, but Dale had been through the first mudslide on Bluebird Canyon. And as the story, at least in my memory, goes, Marilyn experienced a drop in water pressure, or maybe vice versa. No, I think it was Marilyn, and you went upstairs and you checked the water upstairs, no water pressure in the house, power went out. And Dale went, And then went through the neighborhood knocking on the door saying, there's going to be a mudslide. and this moment where people could look at him and determine, is he right or is he wrong, right? Like, you're going, wow, I mean, maybe just the power went out, but the power connected to the water, there's something going on. Turns out he was right. Turns out everybody got out of their homes before the slide actually hit. And I think one person maybe stepped on cactus on the way out, and that was like the worst injury that happened. But there is a picture of wisdom, right, that comes in. And I think in many ways in our story, Jesus is speaking with the same posture. Like, look, you guys are building your hearts on this foundation that in the end creates no stability. When that storm comes, all of that's going to slide. And not just like, oh, it might shake a little bit, but the whole house is going to come down. And Jesus, with this wisdom, is imparting this knowledge where we have an opportunity to listen or not. And you could imagine Dale knocking on the door and somebody going, you know what? Thank you. I appreciate that. Like, I'm still watching a show. When this is over, my wife and I will think about it and maybe we'll leave. You know, maybe that's, we'll consider this. Or like, I bet you're right. I bet you're right. But right now I'm a little bit busy. And you go, oh, you have this sort of moment, right? This urgency. And as Jesus is teaching this, I think this is what's so important, is he's not just going like, hey, this would be a good idea. He's saying, no, 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 this is the difference between life and death, between blessing and a curse. This is an opportunity, a moment that you have to do the deep work. And we see here the foolish man, the sort of posture of the heart is to say, ah, I'll get to it someday, right? To ignore it. To not pay attention until things get really bad. I don't know if you like this. I finally went to the dentist the other day. I hate the dentist, right? And you're like, I'll go when I've got pain, right? But until then, I just want to think everything's okay. Is anybody else like that? It's terrible, right? No cavities. Yes, I made it. But like, that was the grace of God right there. Some of these things I would rather just ignore. And I think sometimes this is why Jesus says this is the narrow road. That the wide road is this road of just ignorance, denial, pretending everything is okay. The house looks great. Look at it. It's beautiful, right? And Jesus is looking instead at the foundation and saying, you've built upon sand. And so often we are focused on those outward things. I think this is what Jesus realized in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount. He's going like, look, it looks okay, but gosh, the foundation. What you need to do is get deeper down, which is why Jesus is saying it's not enough to not murder. It's not enough to not commit adultery. It's about anger in the heart. It's about lust in the heart. It's about getting down into the sort of bedrock of who you are. That's where the work needs to be done. And Jesus is saying that is what the wise man will do. The wise man loves truth and goes after truth, even when it's painful, even when it's hard to swallow. Psalm 14:1 says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. And what would make us say that? It's like this avoidance of consequence, avoidance of responsibility, avoidance of having to give an account for our lives. And Jesus is saying, no, your life is a gift. In fact, one that you have to steward, that ultimately in the end, you're accountable for how you live. Proverbs 14:16 says, one who is wise is cautious and turns away from evil, but a fool is reckless and careless. I was talking to Chris Linz this morning. She needs a piece of furniture built. If anybody's good at following instructions, talk to Chris, because she needs somebody to come put this thing together. But was asking, you know, that question, and I immediately went like, oh, I'm so bad at following instructions. Right? Like, I get it, and I just start pouring the whole thing out of the box, and like, we'll just figure it out. Go to the instructions when we get stuck, which inevitably I get stuck. It's a foolish way to build a piece of furniture, right? The care and the concern. Do we give this kind of concern to our hearts? Jesus is saying it is first and foremost. You seek first those things, and all the rest sorts itself. Seek first the kingdom. And these storms that come, I would like to say they're avoidable, but they're not. That life brings with it storms. But what we see is that these storms that do hit us in life, and all of us right now are still in the midst of a big one, a big shaking. But as we hit these, there's opportunity in it for us. Opportunity to get down there and to actually check and see where the cracks are in the foundation. James, you're all familiar with this verse, says, "Count it joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." Jesus says that same thing. You want to be perfect. And he's not talking about like, oh, perfect, 100% on the test. He's talking about healthy and whole, properly functioning. And the trials have this way of developing in us, not just a sort of immediate relief or health, but a sort of longevity that comes with it. The ability to remain when the storms hit, to weather the storm, to be able to stand in the midst of that conflict unmoved. This is the opportunity. And so James says, oh, consider it joy when they come, which is certainly not a normal response. And yet we realize that in the struggle, there's an invitation. He later says, "Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him." And this idea, as we remain, this is to stand in this place of glory, to be shaped further and further into the image of Jesus, that we would have his heart, his mind. This is what God is after. This is what he's doing in these moments of trial. And I think for all of us, we have seen so many times where our lives around us have come collapsing down, haven't we? Where somebody has lived in some pattern of sin for years and years and years, and then the whole thing comes crumbling down all at once. But the truth is that all of us have these kind of little storms, these little moments, these little failings throughout our life. And to see these as opportunities instead of defeats, that when we fail, we're being shown more where God wants to do the deeper work, where God is welcoming us onto that narrow path. Too often we want to fix it our own way, which, like I was saying, is to often to avoid the problems until they hurt too bad. Or to focus on the outward, just holding it sort of all together. We say the right things, we even do the right things. And Jesus has been showing us this, that it doesn't work, right? You can say, "Lord, Lord," you can prophesy and heal and even do all these things in Jesus' name, and he's going like, "Look, I don't know you," right? Like, knowing, intimacy, connection is the point. So what does Jesus tell us, the way, the difference between the wise man and the fool? Both here, but only one obeys. And obedience, to me, the texture of obedience, that kind of is the essence of faith. Is God who he says he is? Is God right when God says, "Blessed are the meek, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are the poor in spirit"? Do we go like, okay, how do I adjust my life to fit the blessed life that Jesus is describing? Or do we, which probably I'm speaking for all of us here, go, how do I kind of do a bit of both, right? Bit of the world, bit of the divine, bit of man's value and God's value. How do I kind of come up with a hybrid of these two? But you go, these are cracks in the foundation when we do this. Jesus is saying the one on the solid foundation is the one who says, "Not my will, but your will be done. Not my plan, but your plan. Not my blueprint, but your blueprint." read this quote to you before, but I'm going to read it again. This is Lewis in Mere Christianity, and he's talking about seeing your life as a living house. In fact, I think he might have stole this from George MacDonald, but he says, imagine yourself as a living house. God comes in to rebuild that house. At first, perhaps you can understand what he's doing. He's getting the drains right and stopping the leaks in the roof and so on. You knew those jobs needed doing, and so you're not surprised. But presently, he starts knocking the house about in a way that hurts abominably and does not seem to make sense. What on earth is he up to? The explanation is that he's building quite a different house from the one you thought of, throwing out a new wing here, putting on an extra floor there, running up towers, making courtyards. You thought you were going to be made into a decent little cottage, but he's building a palace. He intends to come and live in it himself. This idea of like, what's the plan? And we're like, I think we were done. This room was done, right? I always think of like a wrecking ball coming through and you're going like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That room was finished. It was cozy. We had a fireplace and a comfortable chair and everything was working. And Jesus is like, what plans are you looking at, right? Ours. And for a while, those two run in sync. But at some point, there's a testing. And as Jesus pulls us out, he's going, here's the blueprint, you guys. The Sermon on the Mount is the blueprint to blessing, to flourishing. This is how it's done. It's hard, but it's worth it. And the question is, will we obey? And even more, will we obey when the storms hit? And there's some great stories in the Gospels about storms that hit. And this group of disciples are often in a boat somewhere. And in the first one, Jesus is asleep in the front. You guys know this story, right? But let me read it anyways. This is from Mark 4, 35 through 41. It says, that day when evening came, he said to his disciples, let us go to the other side, leaving the crowd behind. And they took him along, and just as he was in the boat, there were also other boats with him. And a furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat, and so it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said, teacher, don't you care if we drowned? He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, quiet, be still. And the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? They were terrified and asked each other, who is this? Even the wind and waves obey him. Is that good? Who is this? Like, oh my gosh. And you don't you feel for these guys? They're in the midst of this storm. And I love that Jesus sleeps through it. You know, I've mentioned that Dallas Willard says if he had to describe Jesus in one word, he would say relaxed. And you're like, seriously relaxed? Like in the midst of the storm, he's just asleep on the cushion. And they're so scared. Don't you care if we drown? I wonder how many of us have thought that in our lives at different points. Maybe even today. Like as you look at the waves in the world and all the crisis and all that's going on, and you're like, Jesus, don't you care if we might drown? And what you see so beautifully in this is that the wind and the waves obey him. And that reality, I think, could lead, I think, we're to recognize the power of that, but it could lead to a sort of incorrect assumption that with Jesus in the boat, the storms will always be calmed. And I don't think that's the point of the story. I think the point of the story is they were fine all along, even in the midst. And when we get scared, we clutch to the boat itself as if that's our stability, and it never, ever is. That's the foundation where the house will come down. If it's up to you, if it's up to your blueprint, if it's up to your way of handling these problems or these situations, it won't withstand. And Jesus is saying, even though he didn't cause this storm necessarily in your life, that he will see you through. He's in the boat. He's with you. And he's saying, just obey me. Follow my lead. and this house collapsing, I think all of us experience fear. All of us have times where our faith or our trust, I think faith and trust are often good synonyms for each other. That when life hits us and it looks like we're blindsided and we don't understand what God is doing, has that ever happened to you? I think there's plenty of times where God does something in my life and I'm like, I see what you're doing. Good call. Other times where I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, weren't we kind of both on the same page here in this event? I've got a couple of these still that I go, I don't know why God did it this way. And I think God's not threatened by that question. He just says, trust me. Trust me. And you think about, you know, I loved Paul's song that he sang for offering, this idea of these sort of desert moments that we go through. And how Israel was constantly thinking, let's go back to Egypt. Like, there's the promised land, and they're like, it's too hot in the desert. Let's go back where we had food. Let's go back where we had some security and some control. In other words, let's go back to slavery. This guy, Edwin Friedman, that I like, he calls this a failure of nerve. That when the storms come, one of the things that causes us to crash is we liked it the way it was before and we insist on going back, even though it was broken, even though it wasn't working. We prefer that and we retreat back to it. Part of trusting God is realizing He's leading us somewhere and it's good, even if we have to go through the desert. And the other sort of crashing down that Friedman describes is what he calls a failure of heart. And the failure of heart is that thing in us that just wants to give up, just wants to quit. And when life gets hard and difficult and when you're walking through seasons of storm, right, these two realities are constantly coming at you. I debated telling this story, but I was one time standing in line at Trader Joe's getting checked out. This is like a year and a half ago or so, and the person checking out my groceries was like, I'm off in 15 minutes. And I remember feeling all this envy. And I was like, okay, I could totally check groceries out. That's like going, can I get an application? And that's not to say that I don't feel called to be a pastor. It means it's hard. And as you're going through it, like, God has this way of going, like, hey, it's going to get harder. Keep going. Keep going. It's too hot. It's too painful. And He's like, it's going to get worse, but keep going. Right? Keep going. Don't lose heart. Don't lose nerve. Trust me. And that message, trust me. I read this quote from Martin Luther King, and this was years after the I Have a Dream speech. And he says, I must confess that the dream that I had that day has in many points turned into a nightmare. Now, I'm not one to lose hope. I keep on hoping. I still have faith in the future. I've gone through a lot of soul searching and agonizing moments, and I've come to see that we have many more difficulties ahead, and some of the old optimism was a little superficial, and now it must be tempered with a solid realism. Is that good? King, in this brilliant speech, casts the vision and the dream, and yet the dream has got to be refined. And he doesn't lose hope. And you go, that's maturity, right? That's endurance. That's the fruit of standing in the crucible and remaining in the trial and enduring the storm. And you see Jesus is going like, you're going to be like this house that cannot be shaken. This is the house that we're building. I like His word, solid realism. And Jesus isn't talking about this like, you know, crazy optimistic idea. He's talking about real life and saying, put this stuff into practice, that these aren't like ideals here. These are like ways for you to live, ways to conform your life. Don't just hear it, obey it, do it. There's a story I heard about this physicist named Theodore Kaluza, and he's brilliant. And he was 30 and he didn't know how to swim, so he read a book on swimming, and then he jumped into the water. Nuts, right? Talk about a guy who goes like, okay, let's do it, right? Like, I know it, but like, now I will obey. And to go faith, I think, is a lot like that. You spend all this time reading scripture, and now you know it. But know it. Do you really know it? You know it if you obey it. You live it. 10 chapters later in the book of Mark, there's another storm. And there on the sea, now Jesus isn't in the boat. Jesus actually went off to take some time to pray. And the disciples are out there and they're scared once again. And then they see Jesus on the water. You know this one. And Peter says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink and cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You have little faith, he said. Why did you doubt? And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly, you're the Son of God. And when we live this life in this place of obedience, in this place of trust, what we see and understand and realize is that Christ is that foundation always. That it's in that place that we're stable. Too often we choose the boat, or we read about those who get out and walk on the water. But Jesus is saying, like with me, the storm isn't a storm. And instead of Jesus calming the storm and allowing him to walk on the placid Sea of Galilee, he allows the waves to crash and says, come to me. This is the narrow way to get out of that boat. And we're like, oh, this is too much. And it's too much for Peter. And he sinks and goes down into the water. But Peter is like the victor in this story. He's the one who obeys. He's the one who gets out, and that longing in him. He doesn't want to just follow Jesus. He wants to do what Jesus does. And Jesus is the ultimate picture of the Sermon on the Mount. He is what we're being shaped and formed into. He is our rabbi so that we can walk in his steps. And he's saying, here's how you do it. Love your enemies. Bless those who persecute you. Stop judging others. Stop worrying about appearances. Stop worrying about tomorrow. Lean into the deep work God is doing. And this, to me, is the ultimate sign of stability. It's Jesus asleep in the front of the boat. I use this term plenty of times, but Friedman calls it non-anxious presence, and I love that about Jesus. But you go, this is what the church should be today in this world. As the world is shaking and the wind is blowing, we should be in this posture of stability of heart. This non-anxious presence. Hearts that are at peace. Hearts that aren't alarmed at the storm. We should be navigating through the storm with our eyes focused. And I think too often we get focused on the problems and we lose sight. I just heard this story and I was like, oh, this is so terrible. But it was somebody who worked for a news agency, and I'm not going to say which one, but they had this, it's called a Chiron. It's their like logo, and it sits there in the bottom right corner of the screen. And they eventually went, oh, we have to move that around throughout the day because it's being burned into people's TV screens. Right? Meaning they're turning it on at 8, turning it off at 11, day after day after day, until this image is burned into the screen. And you go, what are we focusing on all day long, and what imprint is it having on our hearts? And so often we're living in that place of anxiety and fear and worry, and Jesus is inviting us to that place of reassurance and contentment. James says, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. And that look of intimacy between us and God, that's everything. I wasn't going to share this, but I'm sure it's a little bit of a spoiler, and I don't mean this as some big Ted Lasso endorsement. There's a moment where his therapist is leaving, and he's offended. She's just going to depart, and she's written him a letter. Sorry, this isn't a massive spoiler. It's a tiny spoiler. But in this, he's like, fine, I'll read your stupid letter. And he looks down, and you see as he reads, he's like, you spelt favorite wrong. And he's like so mad at her. And as he's reading, all of a sudden, you see his face soften, and his eyes look up at hers. And her eyes kind of look down. And this intimacy there. I think sometimes when we think, keep your focus on Jesus. What are you focusing on? Are you just staring at him like hard, or are you looking into his eyes? Because the truth is, when you look into the eyes of Jesus, what you see is eyes that know you and love you. Just who you are. He reaches down to Peter and he says, oh, my little doubter, right? Oh, you have little faith. And you go, it's that hand, it's that intimacy, it's that knowing, right? Jesus says, that's everything. To look and for him to say, I know you. And Paul tells us that's the foundation. He says, according to the riches of his glory, that he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you being rooted and grounded in what? In love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. That is the stability that we long for, is found in those eyes and in that loving gaze. That is the blessed life. That's the rock right there upon which we stand. If we heard this, if we've heard this, we must obey. I have some questions for us to think about, and then we're going to go to communion. Is there work God is doing in your life that you're resisting? Are there places where your plans and God's plans are opposed to one another? I just said, how's that working out for you? Oftentimes, the difficulties in our life are when those two things are in struggle with tension. How's it working out? Probably not good. How do we like trust and obey? Two, what are the fears that distract your faith? What are the waves in your life that break your gaze from the safety of Jesus' eyes? Because there are, and it's okay. I mean, this is like how we're wired, right? We see danger and threats and all of these things around us. But when they break that gaze, this is when we react wrongly. Number three, how is God beckoning you out of the perceived safety of the boat onto the stormy sea? What might God be wanting to show you about himself and about yourself? That's the church we want to be. We want to be the kind of church that gets out of the boat, right? We want to be the kind of church that is light and salt. We want to be the kind of church that moves towards Christ. And understand it's right there. That is the answer. That's the foundation.